Kingdom of Nod, across the country, around the world, and throughout the universe. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the CBC Radio Network.
All right, here we go. Here is Gary North. He's a hard guy to get hold of. Gary North is really a hard guy to get hold of. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Art.
Where are you actually located?
I am in the sticks. We are in the northwest Arkansas region.
Way out there. Well, I am too. By the way, is that a good thing or a bad thing, considering what's coming?
Well, I suppose it depends on exactly which sticks you're into. My goal here was to get as far away as I could from any major metropolitan area without going completely into, say, northern Minnesota, which my wife really was not too enthusiastic about. And then I've also, at the same time, got access to the University of Arkansas Library, which is very important to me because I still do my writing. And so I wanted to be close to a good library, but yet pretty much away from a large city. So that we found the Fayetteville area.
Do you mean all you need is not available on the Internet?
Well, in all honesty, all I need is available on the Internet, but I do writing some material, historical material, where that has not been put onto the web yet. But yes, you're correct. As far as my business is concerned, yes, I can do it and do most of it off of the Internet.
What will happen to the Internet, by the way? I make extensive use of it. I'm online all the time like you are. I'm just lucky enough to have a second phone line. What's going to happen to the Internet in 2000?
That's going to depend very heavily on how well and if the telecommunication industry gets itself compliant. And at the present time, it does not look good. You can't have the net if you do not have functional phone lines. And AT&T has about 500 million lines of code to correct. Sprint has about 100 million. MCI is not saying, but since it's about halfway between the two, it's probably 250 to 300 million lines of code to correct.
Wow.
This is an enormous undertaking for these companies. So if they get it compliant, yes, there is at least a possibility that the web will stay up, but we do not have any large telecommunications firm claiming compliance at this time, which means the news is probably not good.
I notice it says here you live on 60 acres, have two natural gas wells, and three power generators.
That's correct.
So you're living what you're preaching then.
Yes, I did decide, one of the strong reasons I decided, in fact, to come to the region where I came, is that it is still possible for a private citizen to buy property that does have natural gas on it. There are several regions where you can do this in the United States. Eastern Kentucky, Eastern West Virginia, you can find properties like this. And so I decided that was a way of preserving electrical power should there be blackouts. And I think the likelihood is that there will be.
I've got one generator, and it operates on a large propane tank, and then I'm dead.
Yeah, well, propane is cheap, especially this summer, and I would say that's a very good investment for people. Now, people say, why should I be worried about the possibility of electrical power going down? There are, in the United States, approximately 7,800 power-generating or power-transmitting organizations, public utilities. There is no compliant public utility in the United States at this time.
None?
None. About 2 weeks ago, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission sent out a letter to every power plant in the U.S. that is under their jurisdiction, about 108 of them, and said, gentlemen, you have 90 days to get to us a complete report on how you plan to be completely compliant by July 1st of next year.
Is that possible?
Compliant nuclear plant in the world.
Is it possible?
I don't think it is, but if it is, we don't have a working model. And that's your problem. Let me give you an example. This is a real horror story, although there are lots of them that we could talk about, but this one really stunned me. Governor Bush of Texas found out about Y2K probably sometime last fall, and in November sent a letter out to the state agencies saying, we want to know. If you're compliant, fine, but if you're not, then let us know when you intend to be compliant. And this went out to the Public Utilities Commission, to all of the power generating plants in the state of Texas.
Right.
Now, seven of those plants generate about 85% of all of the electrical power in the state of Texas. Those plants, one of the representatives of those plants testified about 3 weeks ago to Congresswoman Morella's committee in Washington. At that time, this public utility representative said, on average, these seven gigantic firms have allocated $300,000 to fix the problem. Now, at that same testimony, Pepco, which is the company that supplies the power for the capital of the United States and the regional area of Maryland, said, we have allocated $10 million, and we do not expect it possible to be able to keep that allocation that low much longer. Now, the disparity is enormous. The difference between 300,000 allocated this late in the game and 10 million indicates that the plants in Texas are simply not going to make it.
All right, let me do a couple of things here. It also says you believe Western civilization could actually collapse in the year 2000 if the power grid goes down for over 60 days. I was on the Lynn Samuels show on WABC earlier tonight, doing a sort of a thing, a one-hour thing with her. And I told her, Lynn, if you doubt what'll happen, just go to the fuse box in your home and throw the mains off and start walking around your house or apartment and see what a dead place you're living in. Now, there was a movie called The Trigger Effect, Gary, in which the power went off. I don't know if you happened to, if you caught that.
Yeah, I saw the movie. Yeah.
And do you think that's a good example of what would happen if the grids went down?
No, the trigger effect was much too mild.
God, they were killing each other.
Yes, they were. The problem of the trigger effect, some of the script was quite good. I don't think the movie as a whole was, but there were some sections of that movie which people really should watch very carefully. One was the section of what happens in the supermarket, and the other was the section of what happens in the local gun store. Those two sections are worth watching the movie. The problem with that movie, which presumably it's Los Angeles they're talking about, is that when the power goes down, it goes down for 3 days or 4 days before people really sense that it may not come back on.
That's right.
Then they head for the open highway. The fact of the matter, Art, is that at that point in Los Angeles County and the L.A. Basin, you would not get onto that highway. It would be wall-to-wall, bumper-to-bumper stalled cars. It would be like a gigantic candle that the lights had gone out and the wick had gone out. You would not move out.
Well, not a good example of that, Gary, is this last winter in Chicago, they had some terrible snows. And what happened is, and I'm sure it's exactly the same thing, that a bunch of cars got up on the freeway, and they ran out of gas, and they stopped everybody else, and before you know it, you had 13 miles of cars with people in danger of freezing to death.
Yes.
Now, that's exactly what would occur, because people trying to get out of town would get up there and run out of gas, and they would stop everybody else. You'd have 18-wheelers turned over. It'd be horrible.
The best example of this I ever saw was forecasted in a book which I downplayed and dismissed, and I think did so erroneously over 25 years ago, a book written by Roberto Vaca called The Coming Dark Age. And in that book, he has a description of the freeway blockage when a power system goes down and stays down. The United States government is aware of this, and over the last 6 weeks has begun making plans to, I think there's another way of explaining it, of implementing a martial law situation in 2000. They're doing it under the guise of the phrase cyber terrorism, which is okay because that really is, in effect, what we're dealing with, except we did it to ourselves. The St. Patrick's Day speech by Secretary of Defense Cohen to the National Press Club was very clear. They are setting up right now a fusion of the National Guard units and the Army Reserves. And they are specifically doing this because they have said we're going to be hit by cyber terrorism in an unstated period of time, but they say it is inevitable. And the next day, General Shultz released a press release saying, yes, the war is going to come to America. We are going to be hit by these terrorist attacks, and we have to have an emergency SWAT, essentially a SWAT team or rapid deployment force to keep peace in the cities.
Good Lord. You really think it potentially could be that bad?
It's on the web. And by the way, let me say this tonight, and I want the listeners to understand. What I say about the web or the documentation is on my site. You can click to the documents. Now, I will interpret, and I'll tell you when I'm doing that. But if you're talking about, did Cohen give the speech, did Shultz release the press release, not only did they do it, you can get it on my site and read the original document.
What is your site, please?
It's called just www.garynorth.com.
Okay, we'll get an immediate link up if we don't already have one. I'm sure we do. www.garynorth.com.
That's it.
That's easy. And I'm sure my webmaster is listening. And he does a lot of code writing. I'd like to, before we get into the specifics of this horrible thing that's going to occur, I would like to go back to the beginning. I played a stupid little song called Two Digits for a Date.
Yes.
And it implied that way back when, it was just a bunch of programmers who wanted to save money. What was the genesis of all this? Was it that simple?
It was, in a way, let me tell you, it's even simpler. In the 1950s, they had punch cards.
I remember.
80 digits on a punch card.
Right.
Those digits were scarce. They saved two digits of the 80 by going to 9 and by dropping the 1 and the 9 of the century and just putting in 55 or 56 or 58 or 62 in the digits, not filling up those extra two digits on the punch card
suddenly,
the 1 and the 9.
Suddenly I understand. That makes all the sense in the world. When they were using punch cards, space was indeed very valuable, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I'll be damned. And so then that just carried over to the writing of code in all of these important basic programs.
Yes, it did. Let me tell you the most famous code writer who was involved in it. He admitted this about, I believe, on February 25th under essentially not cross-examination but questioning. This was Alan Greenspan, who was the head of the Federal Reserve System.
Alan?
And he had testified to Senate Banking Committee about things in general, and then finally Senator Bennett, who's been very good on this issue, said, well, Mr. Greenspan, what do you think of the year 2000 problem? And Greenspan began to reminisce. And he said, well, you know, I was working on these things back in the mid-1960s. I was a programmer. He said, I was just so proud, we were all so proud when we could come in and save a little space. And he said, that's what we did. We saved space. We saved memory. We were quite proud of ourselves. Then he went on and he said, now, by the way, he said, I don't think I could recognize my own code today. And there wasn't any documentation. We didn't write any of this down. And so he said, this is a very, very serious problem because those of us who did it can't remember exactly how we did it, and now we have to fix it.
Okay, an obvious question, and when we come back, we're about to break here at the bottom of the hour, but when we come back, a lot of people are going to want to know, well, how come we can't just fix it? I mean, how come we just can't go in and make two more spaces and modify the software very simply? Why is this a big problem, and why are we saying it is, it's too late to fix it? So hold on, Gary, we'll be right back. My guest is Gary North. And as I told you earlier, he is the 1,000-pound gorilla of the Y2K thing, along with about one or two others. The predictions really are extremely dire. And tonight you're going to find out just how serious it's going to be. No cash. If we have a cash economy, That means people are going to start making a run on banks as we enter the second half of 1999. And I don't know, we'll ask. Is it reasonable they would do so? Is panic ever reasonable? I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, now back to Gary North. Gary, the obvious question is, why is it a problem? Why can't we go back in and simply program the ability to handle the year 2000 into these mainframe computers? What is the problem?
It's not to say that you can't with a mainframe computer. Visa and MasterCard seem to have conquered most of the problems that they had had as recently as 8 months ago. One company may be able to do it if it gets enough programmers. May not also. But we don't have many success stories. Visa MasterCard is the largest of the success stories that we have. There's nothing other than, no other that I know of comparable. The basic problem, Art, is that it's not just the program itself, it's 30 years of data. 30 years of information that in the old days was key punched in,
right,
and it is filled up, which constitutes now something in the range of 3/4 of all the information that we have in the Western world today is in a mainframe computer somewhere. And I've called it the Alzheimer's economy, because when you cannot access the data, and you can't access it because it's in the wrong format, that it thinks that 00 is 1900 instead of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the numerical programs to access that data are accessing the wrong century. That data, or those data, technically, plural, those data simply disappear from view. You can't access them. You can't consult them. You can't compute with them. That's your problem.
So what disappears? I'm trying to apply this to the average person. For example, somebody who has a bank account, somebody who's got a CD, somebody who's got a retirement plan, what happens?
If the bank runs begin when I think they will, which is the second half of next year, and I may be overly optimistic, they could begin as early as next April, what you're going to see then is the classic problem of every fractional reserve banking system, and that is the money isn't in the bank, it's been loaned out. It's in the company's coffers. They've gone in, they've borrowed money,
right,
they've got their plans operating, they're paying their people, they're supporting inventory, or whatever has to be done with the money. The money's not in the vault. The money has been loaned out. The difficulty then is that all over the world, people have been told, you may get your money in cash on demand.
Yeah.
Well, they can't.
They can't.
And so when this negative psychology hits, and I think it'll hit, frankly, I think it'll hit first in Japan, not in the United States.
Well, that's bad, too, because they could they begin recalling funds that they have invested here, and they are substantial, of course.
Yes, huge, gigantic.
Yep.
They're the lender of the world.
Right.
When the Japanese housewife figures this out, which I think will happen, probably begin to figure it out next April, because they're on a fiscal year on April 1st, which rolls into 2000. And when the Japanese housewives begin to understand that the Americans have sold them computers that do not work, I think the run will begin in Japan. The same day, by the way, Canada rolls over into 2000, and New York State rolls over.
This is July 1st now?
No. It's early. This is April Fool's Day. That will be on April 1st of 99. Now, 44 other states roll over in this country on July 1st.
Now, you're being heard right now all over Canada, coast to coast in Canada. Probably most of the Canadians up are listening. You're saying that their nightmare begins April 1st.
That will be the first big trigger. Japan first, because, of course, they're on the other side of the dateline. And then Canada, technically, the next day. But both April 1st. That will be the first large-scale test of the system, because all of those systems will record then, if they're mainframes, that they've rolled into fiscal 1900. And that's your problem.
Okay, then on April 1st of 99, you say it'll be sort of like a first lightning strike. What do you expect to occur on that day?
I expect that computer systems will begin to break down in both those countries, that they will begin to act haywire, bad data will be spewed out of them. People will begin to realize there is a fundamental problem. Some will shut down. And the word will get out that something fundamentally is wrong with the system. But the public will finally realize it can't be deferred anymore, and all the background noise, which Y2K is right now, it's Muzak is all it is, because people do not understand that it's real. When they finally begin to perceive that it's real, they're going to say things like, well, maybe I ought to get a little cash out of the bank, just for safety's sake.
Sure.
And the difficulty is that when enough people do this, and as the lines get longer, people will say, maybe I ought to get even a little extra out of the bank, more than I'd planned, and by the time they're at the front of the line, it's gimme it all. And of course, they can't do this.
No, of course
not.
So
there will be a shutdown of the banking system. They will simply say, you cannot get your money out, that cannot be done, it will not be done, and they will impose emergency banking orders. At that point, you have the rationing of money. They've never done it before, but they're going to have to do it then.
What do you mean, rationing of money?
It means that you will be limited on what you can spend and what you can take out in the form of cash. You will not be able to get access to cash, which will create probably an enormous havoc problem for coin-operated vending machines and anybody connected with that industry. That industry will be in really big trouble a year from now. And then, as people realize that they can't get their cash out, that their money has been locked up on a permanent basis, then they're going to look to say, what can I do with my money? Where should I put my money? What kinds of things do I need now with my credit card or with my checks? Because if it's this bad now, what should I do with my money? And that is when I think you will begin to see selling, perhaps even earlier, but selling out of the stock market around the world of people saying, I'm going to buy things. I'm going to buy consumer durables. I'm going to get my hands on stuff instead of electronic promises to pay.
Now, back to the best of Art Bell.
Does this mean that people go out and run their credit cards up to the limit? That kind
of
thing? Let me tell you an interesting story, Gary. We once were talking about the possibility of a comet, like we'd get about 3 or 4 months' notice that a comet was going to crash into the Earth. And we were talking just humorously about running our credit cards right up to the limit, because who cares, right? And so some lady in my audience called, it was either Visa or MasterCard, one of the big ones, and actually asked them, and they put a management person on the phone and gave her an honest answer. They said, you know, we've actually considered that, and our answer would be, we would allow everybody to run their cards right up to the limit, because what do we have to lose? On the one hand, if the comet hits, we're all gone anyway, but on the other hand, if it misses, look how much money we've made.
That's correct.
That's actually was actually their management level answer.
Now, you can do that if, and the if is this, Art, let's assume you really think it's going to come.
Okay.
Now, and let's assume I really think it's going to come.
Right.
Do I want to loan, for example, my money at 7% for a 30-year mortgage for somebody else to buy a house? If I really think there is a suspicion that the electronic records of the transaction and the bank solvency is in question, am I going to loan 30-year money at 7% if I really think I can't get it back because of failure of electronic impulses? So my assumption will be the one thing you can be absolutely sure of is that when the banks say you cannot get your cash out, the response of the public is going to be that I'm not putting any more in.
That's true. course.
And at the same time, you will get exactly the credit card effect that you're describing. So your classic squeeze takes place. You have very high demand for loans running the interest rates up, and you have very low desire on the part of lenders to give the institutions any extra money to make those loans.
Absolutely. So the wise people will go out and borrow at 7% first, right?
First. That's correct.
Is this
That's
real?
What I think is going to happen. I think interest rates will go double digit and towards the end of next year, triple digit.
My God. I mean, this is Armageddon, virtually, you're describing.
Let's put it this way. Small A Armageddon.
All right. Yes. Is there a chance, Gary, that, in other words, is there any way you can forecast how long this total trigger effect is going to last? Will we recover from it? And if so, in what form? What do you envision post-Y2K?
Art, the big one, as I call it, the big one is the question of the power systems, the power grid.
Right.
That's the big one. Good men, and I trust them, say you're going to get at least blackouts, brownouts, and unpredictable behavior throughout the year 2000. I think that's the minimum that you say is likely.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty we're facing is that we have never had one of these production systems get compliant. They're operating with embedded chips that have the programs in them, and worse, this is the biggest problem, this is the horrendous one, all of them exchange information and data with each other.
That's true.
And if company A gets its computers compliant and imports non-compliant data from company B, it completely reinfects its own system. This is the problem of the systemic failure.
It's like a virus.
It, I think, is exactly like a virus. And so the difficulty you have is everybody is saying, oh, well, you go first. It's the you go economy. Everybody else says, you spend the $300 million or the $400 million. Let's see you get it done first, then we'll think about getting it done. If the power grid acts like it did in New York back in 65,
yes,
where it's an unpredictable event, and it is unpredictable because we don't know how these systems will respond because of the programming, and we don't know how they will interact. If the grid overloads, then you have a crisis of monumental proportions.
Oh, yes.
Because how do you get them booted back up? They need power from the other one, just as they did in New York in 65. You have to get power from outside your region to boot you back up. And they're all going to be hit with the same problem the same day. If they go down, and if they don't get back up within, I believe it's a 60-day minimum, I don't think they'll get back up.
At all?
At all.
Well,
now, again, that's my view. I can't tell you there's an official out there saying this is true, but let me tell you, Art, what they do say. The Electric Power Research Institute, which is the $500 million a year think tank of the electrical industry, was approached by Business Week reporter in February.
Mm-hmm.
And he reported in March that when he asked them, can this system go down, will it be able to be maintained, the answer is, we don't know.
We don't know.
Now, that's a very chilling answer when you're talking about an institution which supports the whole civilization.
Have there been any experiments, Gary? In other words, has any large mainframe, has somebody reset it just to see what would happen?
Yeah, and usually they shut down.
They shut down.
One specialist in embedded chips, a man named David Hall, said he has been present in several of these testing situations, and he posted just about a week ago, he said, in every case I have been associated with, the system has simply shut down.
Good Lord. Well, then what about, people would obviously ask, what about 2001? Would it all be fixed by then?
How do you fix it?
I don't know.
I mean, the point is, if you can't fix it when interest rates are 7%, if you can't fix it when everybody's content to live in the city, and you've got whatever programmers you have out there working on it at exceedingly high wages and rising, if you can't fix it now, how do you fix it if there's no bank? If you can't pay your programmers, why are they going to sit in New York and Chicago in the middle of winter of the year 2000 to sit in a freezing building to work on computer code? What do you pay them with?
Stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, in a sense, that's right. Now, let's talk about stuff. Stuff in the United States, we don't think of it, but stuff in the United States is almost entirely dependent on the operation of the railroad system.
Correct.
Because the big stuff, coal and chemicals and wheat and grains out of our farms, all of that big-time stuff is shipped in by the trains.
Well, railroads and, well, listen, I live out here in the desert, and I can assure you Las Vegas is almost entirely dependent for its food and everything else on trucking.
That's right. Both forms. However, and of course, both are completely vulnerable. But let's talk about the trains, because Las Vegas is presumably bringing in its stuff from larger cities, grain processing plants, and so forth.
I'm sure.
All right. The average large city, its power generation is probably coal. About 40 to 45% of America's power is powered by coal.
Right.
Now, the trains are not compliant. Union Pacific is not compliant. They have been working on getting compliant since 1995, and I checked their website today. They are still not compliant and not putting any date on when for sure they're going to get compliant. They all hope they're going to get compliant next year, but nobody is sure. The difficulty is, if there are problems with the train switching systems,
yes,
all computerized and mostly run out of Florida, if those train switching systems begin acting haywire, then the engineers have got to stop those trains until the situation is fixed. Now, the difficulty is it takes something like 3 train loads of coal per day to run a large city's power generation plant.
Right.
Per plant. If there's any interruption of the coal shipments, then what you're talking about is a breakdown, again, the running out of power to generate the power stations in the cities in the middle of winter. And that's the big one.
Huh.
And nobody has an answer for that one. They don't address it. There's almost no public discussion of it, because it's an unsolvable problem at the present time.
So, no power. No power from several points of view.
This is what it looks like to me. Now, I'm willing to say, okay, someone out there may have this great solution, but I have been spending 20 to 30 hours a week of donated time that I'm just doing because I want to do it. I've been spending this amount of time since January of 1997, and I have yet to see any public document in which this is even discussed.
People are going to say, if it is as bad as you are saying, Gary, or even potentially as bad as you're saying, then what about our elected government? I mean, they are there supposedly to take care of our health and welfare. Well, this clearly has to do with our health and welfare, right?
Surely does.
So what are they doing? They're planning for martial law?
Yes, they are doing that. They generally do not discuss year 2000 as the basis of it, though there is one document in which it is marginally mentioned. And that is on the President's Commission, what's called the PCCIP, the President's Commission on Critical Infrastructure Protection. This was created by executive order in July of 96, and they have a fact list, a frequently asked questions list.
Yes.
And if you go to that fact list, and I've got it on my site, they do say that the effects of the year 2000 problem are comparable to a terrorist attack. That's all they say. They don't go into it, they don't talk about dealing with it, but they do admit it.
Great. All right, Gary, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. You've got a good rest here. I know I need one after hearing all of this. And I thought I was the Dr. Doom of talk show hosts. My guest is Gary North. He knows about Y2K. I suspect by now we've got your attention. If not, keep listening. Well, actually, if we don't have your attention by now, probably you're not educable. So stay right where you are. We'll be back. This is Coast to Coast AM.